The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Hopefully, by the end of the week, we can get back to some listener responses and let you know what some of your fellow listeners are doing and thinking with respect to the KPCG programming. I want to thank Richard Palmer for filling in for me yesterday and on such short notice. Really, he filled in right there at the last minute, so I'm doing my very, very best to keep these young men on their toes, and he's a good man to step in there at the last minute when necessary. Well, it's been said that the truth is the first casualty of war, and today, America is certainly under attack. It's under attack from every direction, and truth, you could say, is dying 1,000 different deaths. We know about this because the Bible says the whole world is deceived. And when you look at America in particular, think of our booklet, America Under Attack. Here Satan has been cast down to this earth. Those demons that were cast out with him. And they are deceiving this world. Truth, as I say, is the casualty in this great spiritual war that we're in. Satan is a master broadcaster, as it says over in Ephesians 2. He's the prince of the power of the air. It's his spirit that's now working in the children of disobedience. It's because of his influence that everywhere you look in the world today, you see and hear lies. Last week we talked about what you see in the traditional Christian world with respect to God's law and how that there are so many people, millions of them, who believe that God's law has been done away, who aren't really teaching what's in the Bible, but they're teaching what others think about the Bible. Or what others say about the Bible. As Herbert Armstrong wrote in an article back in 1982, a person who's born and reared on a faraway, uninhabited island in mid-ocean, having never heard any religious belief, if he had a Bible and was able to read, he would be a total stranger to many of these things I was taught in church. Mr. Armstrong's talking about when he was a young man brought up in the traditional Christian churches that they don't teach what's actually in the Bible. But as he said there, if someone was on a desert island somewhere and all that they had to go by was the Bible itself, what a different understanding or take that they would have on the teachings of God. As he said there in that article, he would see in the Bible just what everybody else does who looks into it honestly. If you go into that study with honesty and humility, what an eye-opener it will be. But Satan, as it says over in 2 Corinthians 4, he's blinded the world to the truth of the true gospel. And so in the world of religion, you see lies, all kinds of lies. Lies like the law of God is old or outdated or harsh, and we need to get rid of it. Satan loves spreading that lie. And of course, in the world of politics, you see lies being spread all over the place. Pick your nation. Pick your administration. Whatever the government. You see lie after lie after lie. And as you've seen in the news here more recently, You see liars bragging about the lies. We went through that Ben Rhodes story a couple of weeks ago and drew attention to it again last week. And we'll have a few more comments even to make on that later on in this segment. But let me set it up first by just referring you to what President Obama said early in, coming into his first term, and of course he's repeated it throughout his presidency.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
The most transparent administration in history. That's the way it's sold repeatedly. That he and his staff, they're truth tellers. They're out disseminating truth. And yet, with any number of subjects, as some of his surrogates are now saying, as some of his own speechwriters are now saying, well, in order to get a lot of these things passed, you have to be deceitful. You have to lie. You have to at least make it a little bit murky and not be so transparent. To take one example, this was something that was said all through 2012, all through 2013. It's the infamous, the now infamous promise that if you like your health care plan or you like your doctor, your coverage, you can keep it. This is clip two.
No matter how we reform health care, I intend to keep this promise. If you like your doctor, you'll be able to keep your doctor. If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan.
You keep your plan. You keep your doctor. Let me repeat that. If you like your plan, you'll be able to keep it. You can keep your health care plan. You can keep it.
I just want to be completely clear about this. I keep on saying this, but somehow folks aren't listening.
You can keep your plan, period.
You can keep it, period. PolitiFact called that the lie of the year in 2013. And that was the year that hundreds of thousands of Americans started to receive their cancellation notices in the mail. As it turned out, they couldn't keep their health care coverage. It was canceled because of the Affordable Care Act. The Obamacare architect, Jonathan Gruber, he's an MIT professor, and this is what he said at a health conference back in 2013 regarding the Affordable Care Act.
This bill was written in a tortured way to make sure CBO did not score the mandate as taxes. If CBO scored the mandate as taxes, the bill dies. Okay, so it's written to do that. In terms of risk-rated subsidies, if you had a law which said healthy people are going to pay in, it made explicit that healthy people pay in and sick people get money, it would not have passed. Okay, just like the people, lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. And basically, you know, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. But basically, that was really, really critical to getting the thing to pass. And, you know, it's the second best argument. Look, I wish Mark was right. We can make it all transparent. But I'd rather have this law than not.
So it was lack of transparency in this case that was able to, or that made it possible to get this legislation passed through. And they were banking, as he just said there, they were banking on the stupidity of the American people who wouldn't understand it. And as he said right there at the end, I mean, it was something that great. It would have been great to be transparent and get the bill through, but it just wouldn't have happened. That's the reality of it. This same architect. He said in 2012, it's a very clever, you know, basic exploitation of the lack of economic understanding of the American voter. See, this is very clever, you see, to lie about it, to not be transparent, to exploit the lack of economic understanding of the American voter. So once it goes through, once it becomes law, then hundreds of thousands of cancellation notices arrive in American mailboxes, and many Americans are furious. If you're one of the millions of people who lost health insurance under this lie, after this lie, well, you can see why so many are so unhappy. Let me move ahead here. This is more recent. This was last Monday on Charlie Rose's show with PBS, Monday, May the 9th. And on this particular program, he had a discussion with three former President Obama speechwriters, David Litt, John Favreau, and John Lovett. And the four of them were basically there to talk about just how skillful the president is at communicating and speaking, whether he's delivering serious speeches or whether they're funny speeches or funny remarks. He's one of the more eloquent speakers in American history. And notice this part of the exchange.
My point is that do you have equal impact on serious speeches because it's about style, use of language, et cetera?
The joke speech is the most fun part of this, but the things I'm the most proud of were the more serious speeches. I think healthcare, economic speeches, and I think I...
Lovett wrote the line about, if you like your insurance, you can keep it.
How dare you?
Huge impact.
And you know what? It's still true. No.
Yeah.
That's John Lovett responding to Charlie Rose, saying that he enjoyed the humorous speech writing, but he was proud of the more serious speeches, like on healthcare. And then John Favreau, as you heard, spoke up and said, well, yeah, he's the one responsible for the line, if you like your insurance, you can keep it. How dare you? Lovett joked back. And then they all just had a good laugh. They all just laughed about this lie of the year in 2013. John Lovett, by the way, is now a writer in Hollywood. He's now writing Hollywood scripts, which is fitting, really, particularly when you think of the program we gave on Ben Rhodes a couple of weeks ago. And that, by the way, that Ben Rhodes puff piece, that came out on Thursday, May 5th. We talked about it at length on Friday, May 6th, that program. The White House reality show, you might remember, if you want to go back and listen to it. And so here that piece comes out May 5th, and it's all in the news through the weekend, and even many journalists in the mainstream were upset by it because it really exposed how that they were dupes. How that they were dupes. Used and manipulated by the Obama White House. And so that's over the weekend, May 7th, May 8th, and then May 9th on Charlie Rose's show. Here comes three more speechwriters. Three more young speechwriters in their 30s bragging about lying. Bragging about the lies and yucking it up, as you just heard. As Victor Davis Hanson wrote, just yesterday. The title is The Pajama Boy White House, by the way. But he wrote this, for the Pajama Boys, rhetoric is everything. Reality, nothing. Fooling the lower middle classes is the stuff of sarcastic comedy. He's writing in response to this exchange on Charlie Rose's program. See, with this group, it's all about the words, certainly not the substance. You think about what Jesus said to the religious of his day. Religious, quote unquote. He said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? I mean, you pay lip service to me. You call me Lord and Master, but you don't do what I say to do. You don't obey the commandments. You don't obey God's laws. Here again, think of the Ben Rhodes piece from 2 weeks ago. Here's another young man. He's not a former speechwriter. He's the current speechwriter. The one with a degree in fiction writing. The one the New York Times compared to a Hollywood producer. Well, here comes Hollywood again. Into the equation. He's like a Hollywood producer who creates a popular television show. Victor Davis Hanson had something to say about that as well. Still in the news, there's still commentary coming out about this piece in the New York Times. Hanson says that Rhodes, well, let me just back it up. It says, recently Ben Rhodes, assistant to the president and deputy national security advisor for strategic communications and speech writing and author of the president's Cairo speech and the Benghazi talking points. That's who Ben Rhodes is. He's the one who wrote that Cairo speech from 2009. He wrote all the Benghazi talking points from 2012. And Hanson says here, confessed to the New York Times that he salted bogus talking points about the Iran deal among the field of novice, wannabe Washington, New York foreign policy, quote-unquote, experts on the expectation that pajama boy journalists on the make. And then it quotes Rhodes in parentheses here. The average reporter we talk to is 27 years old, and their only reporting experience consists of being around political campaigns. That's a sea change. They literally know nothing. They literally know nothing. He referred to the example of putting out the pseudo-experts on the Iran deal. How that the White House created the echo chamber. That those experts were out there saying things that validated what we had given them to say. Pretty amazing. Hanson says, in the absence of rational discourse, we are going to discourse the, well, it uses a bad word there. We're going to discourse the you-know-what out of this. He's quoting Ben Rhodes. We had test drives to know who was going to be able to carry our message out effectively. And he mentions the Plowshares Project, the Iran Project, and so on. And then how that all these tactics drove the critics crazy. Let me switch over to what Richard Cohen said at the Washington Post. Again, in response to the Ben Rhodes piece from 2 weeks ago, the White House lied, Mr. Cohen says. The lie exposes a truth. President Obama wanted the deal almost no matter what. And he had not been beckoned into the talks by more reasonable Iranians, but had initiated them with the previous regime. In other words, he wanted the talks more than the Iranians did, a negotiating position of great weakness. It explains why nothing in the agreement thwarts Iranian efforts to support terrorism in the Middle East or continue to make mayhem in Iraq. It lowers the odds that Iran will continue to adhere to the agreement. So going into this agreement from the start, in a very, very weak position, selling it on a lie, and in the process exposing a media that itself is exposed from time to time for the many lies, for the deception, for the biased coverage, for the lazy journalism. Over at PJ Media, it says the Obama administration's Stalinist-level propaganda never looked so obvious and incompetent. No wonder the Beltway is hopping mad. No, not at Ben Rhodes, the White House's chief propagandist, but at David Samuels, the New York Times journalist who brought this all out and made them all look like such willing dupes. That's what they're mad about. In that program 2 weeks ago, I referred to an article written by the late Ron Fraser about how often the media gets it wrong because of laziness, because of agenda-driven bias, because of the so-called false equivalency, giving just as much time to liars as truth tellers, all in the name of balance. We played that clip for you a week or two ago from Chris Wallace, where he basically admitted that they put Trump on the news, and they still do. Wall-to-wall coverage, 24/7. Because it helps them in their ratings. And other, of course, other voices, at least when the campaign was in full swing for the Republican nomination, other voices were diminished because of this biased coverage. You see it everywhere. Last week there was a story about Facebook that they've been suppressing news stories from conservative sources. And you think, well, big surprise there, Zuckerberg and the Facebook organization, but Facebook has 1.6 billion users. Facebook portrays itself as a neutral distributor of news. And we now know that that's not at all true. There was this piece by Melanie Phillips. You talk about changing the truth or the original source into something that, well, it flies with the younger generation. So what's the big deal? What's the big deal? This is regarding the Shakespeare plays down at London's Globe Theater. The new artistic director there, a lady named Emma Rice, has confessed that she struggles to understand Shakespeare's plays. And I'm sure she's not alone in this day and age. With education being what it is, there's no doubt quite a few that don't understand Shakespeare's plays, like young people perhaps used to generations ago. But to go out and get someone as the new artistic director of London's Globe Theater, of all places. Someone that isn't even a Shakespeare scholar. That's who's running the Globe. Melanie Phillips says the Globe, reconstructed in 1997, is a shrine to the works of Shakespeare. In 1599, the Bard's own theater company built the original Globe on a site very close by. How can its management have appointed as artistic director a person who says some Shakespeare plays feel like medicine? They make her very sleepy. And she'd prefer to listen to the archers instead. Phillips says the depressing likelihood is that Miss Rice ticks all the boxes marked relevance, diversity, and inclusion. She promises casting will be gender and colorblind, texts will be slashed, productions will be populist. There's no way that every line can still be relevant, in my opinion, she says. Her biggest fear is someone coming out of one of her shows and saying, that was boring, or I didn't understand it. That's her biggest fear. It's not that, well, what if I produce something that's dishonest? Or that doesn't even stick to the original intent? Her biggest fear is that someone might be bored. Phillips says that's because she herself doesn't understand it. In particular, she doesn't grasp that Shakespeare doesn't need cuts or additions or transgendered trapeze artists gyrating in hot pants to David Bowie. Phillips says, in Shakespeare's plays, the words are everything. Of course, she says this in a manner that's very different from what Victor Davis Hanson said about the young guns in the White House. Because in their view, it's just the words of fiction. That's all that matters. With Melanie Phillips here, I mean, it's sticking to the original intent. Sticking to the words of Shakespeare himself, rather than changing it, rather than modernizing it, rather than dumbing it down, rather than adding all kinds of modern perversions to somehow make it more interesting, more exciting for a more modern and sophisticated audience, they think. And so you've got to throw in all of this, well, this bizarre activity. I don't know if she was half joking there or if that actually has been something that's injected into the plot lines. Transgenders, I mean. You know, on the trapeze, gyrating and so on. But you look at what is being fought for today. Let me switch back to Victor Davis Hanson. During the showdown over Obamacare, the pro-Obama PAC Organizing for Action put out an ad now known as Pajama Boy. That's how he got his title, I guess. It showcased a young fellow in thick, retro-rimmed glasses, wearing black and red plaid children's-style pajamas and sipping from a mug with a sort of all-knowing expression on his face. And the text urged, wear pajamas, drink hot chocolate, talk about getting health insurance. Hashtag get talking. This was when they were really trying to generate support for the Affordable Care Act. And Hanson says here, most men in Dayton or Huntsville do not lounge around in the morning in their pajamas, with or without built-in foot pads, drinking hot chocolate, and scanning health insurance policies. People don't do this. That our elites think they do, or think the few that matter do, explains why a nation $20 trillion in debt envisions the battle over transgender restrooms as if it were Pearl Harbor. This is the Pearl Harbor of our day. This administration believes. Notice what President Obama said the other day. I think this was Monday during an interview talking about the transgender bathroom rights.
Anybody who's been in school, been in high school, who's been a parent, I think should realize that kids who are sometimes in the minority, kids who have a different sexual orientation or are transgender, are subject to a lot of bullying potentially. They are vulnerable. And I think that it is part of our obligation as a society to make sure that everybody is treated fairly and our kids are all loved and that they're protected and that their dignity is affirmed.
That's what he said on Monday. And when you think about Victor Davis Hanson's column, it's all about the rhetoric. I mean, everything he says there, it sounds great. We're just trying to make sure that there's fairness here. It's all about the children, the kids. It's to make sure they're not bullied. It's to make sure that we love one another, that we protect one another. And in fact, it's just all about indoctrination. It's about taking these perversions into grade schools. It's about assaulting the traditional family. That's really what this is aimed at. America is under attack. And we're so far removed from the original intent of the scriptures. I mean, this particular world leader, like so many, claims to be Christian. And so, okay, look into the Bible. The teachings of God, the teachings of Jesus Christ. Verses that say, does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it's a shame? Isn't this common sense, the Bible says? Can't you just look at nature and see that men shouldn't look like women? Well, there's so many other verses that talk about just how bad it's prophesied to get in the lead up to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. evils that Paul had to address, in some cases that he said shouldn't even be named among the Gentiles. I mean, it shouldn't even come up. In Ephesians, it says it's a shame to even speak of those things, which some are doing in secret. It ought to be embarrassing, shameful, just to bring it up. But look at what's brought up now routinely. And all in the name of fairness, love, dignity, children. But when you look at what's actually happening from God's perspective, when you look at it from God's view, it's appalling. It says in Genesis 6 that God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. It was only evil. And God was disgusted. And of course, we know what happened during Noah's day. We know. And we also know what Jesus said about our day, didn't he? Or don't we? Let me read just a few verses in Romans 1 again. I know we went through this recently. But it says in verse 21, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, and neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. When they knew God, see, they didn't glorify him as God. They didn't look to him. They didn't look to the Bible for the answers. They call Jesus Lord, Lord, but they don't do the things he says to do. And that means we're living a lie when we do that. We're living a lie. It's the sin of hypocrisy. It's got to be more than just words or rhetoric if we're to be true Christians. Verse 22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. That's interesting, isn't it? Profess. There's the words. Well, we're wise. These are wise-sounding words. Let me just play for you. I'll tell you who it is after you hear his comments. This is clip number 6.
We are drowning in partisan rhetoric that is just true enough not to be a lie, in industry-sponsored research, in social media's imitation of human connection, in legalese and corporate doublespeak. It infects every facet of public life, corrupting our discourse, wrecking our trust in major institutions, lowering our standards for the truth, and making it harder to achieve anything.
That is John Lovett at a commencement address in 2013, the same John Lovett that wrote the line for Obamacare. If you like your health plan, you can keep it. And there he is, waxing eloquent about how that we just live in a society where there's lies everywhere, half-truths, a mixture of truth and error. This is the world that you've got to be prepared for. I didn't get a chance to listen to the entire speech. It would be interesting to analyze some of his proposals or his suggestions, his solutions for how you make it in a world such as this, for how you navigate your way through it. Because judging by his actions, well, he's right in there with them. Selling $1 trillion legislation package on a lie. It was all based on a lie. And yet how easy it is to just get up and to feel like, hey, I'm pretty wise here. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. God says. Verse 24 here in Romans, it says, Romans 1, wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. God just gave them up to every imaginable uncleanness, and in some cases, unimaginable. Some things that shouldn't even be spoken of. Verse 28, well, read verses 25, 26, 27, and see what God has to say about such things as transgenderism, homosexuality, and the like. Verse 28 says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. And then he lists off all of these ways of life. Verses 29 through 31. All of this uncleanness. All of this vile affections. And then verse 32. God says, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And so God is allowing it all. He's allowing man to learn just how wretched his own ways of living really are in comparison to God's ways. The way of happiness. The way of abundant living. That's what we're going to get back to in the wonderful world tomorrow, where Satan will be put away and truth will no longer be a casualty. Today, I mean, truth has so many enemies and so few defenders. That's what makes this program and thetrumpet.com and the Key of David crucial. That's what makes God's Word, most importantly, the truth of the Bible, so important. That's our lifeline. That's what we feed on. That's what we consume, as it says over there in John 6. Every word, Matthew 5, or rather Matthew 4, that was how Jesus responded to the devil's attacks. Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. One last verse here before we go to break. It says in John 8, this is verse 44, Christ again speaking to the religious of his day, and he said, you are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. I mean, that's who is ultimately responsible for all of these lies, for agenda-driven bias, for the lack of transparency. And Satan, I mean, he even quoted scripture there in that titanic struggle with Jesus Christ in Matthew 4. But he misquoted it. He misapplies the truth of God. He fancies himself as a religious being, Satan does. He professes himself to be wise, but he tells lies. He speaks lies. He's the father of lies. And he's been cast down to this earth. He's confined to this earth, as it says in Revelation 12, which is why this whole world is deceived. He's the God of it. And as we just read there, the father of lies. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. You can also get the live stream at thetrumpet.com and at kpcg.fm. Don't forget to email us this week. Tell us who you are, where you listen from, how you listen, and what you think of the program. Send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
In David Barton's book, Original Intent, he talks about how so many of the more modern books about America's history, about the founding fathers, some of the more popular biographies of today, how that they rely on contemporary authorities that are there speaking about the founders, telling you what they think you need to know about the founders. And of course, his whole book there is devoted to helping you or encouraging you to go direct to the founders, to study the founders' words instead of relying on hearsay. That's what so many modern biographies really are. It's a lot of hearsay. Because the history that they're discussing, well, it's put together in such a way or packaged in just a way that really fits right in with the agenda driven by us. Last week I was encouraging our students at Armstrong College, they're going through their last day of finals today. Graduation is on Sunday. And of course, we'll have a commencement address as well Sunday evening, delivered by my father back in Edmond, Oklahoma. And you can be sure it'll be based on God's word, based on truth. Everything that we have to offer you is based on that. I mean, that's the foundation. In any event, I was telling the students, encouraging them to make sure that you appreciate your history, whether it's Bible history, whether it's the history of the United States or Great Britain or wherever. To go back and to study the true record, to get the original intent. We forget our history. Well, we don't learn the lessons of our history. And as the saying goes, you're just going to repeat the same mistakes. David McCullough, the famous historian, he talked in a speech in 2005 about just how difficult it was, how challenging it was to help children appreciate their own history. And yet he said, if it's done in the right way, you can get them excited. You can get them fascinated. Because every child, from the earliest days on up, loves to hear a story. And if you're a good storyteller, You can get them excited. But will the storyteller rely on the facts, the truth? Or will he just spin a yarn, put together a good piece of fiction? David McCullough, in that speech from 05, he said, first of all, we have to get across the idea that we have to know who we are if we are to know who we are and where we're headed. This is essential. We have to value what our forebears, and not just in the 18th century, but our own parents and grandparents, we have to value what they did for us, or we're not going to take it very seriously, and it can slip away. If you're negligent with it, God says through the Apostle Paul in Hebrews 2, it will slip away. Of course, McCullough here is just talking about U.S. history and Great Britain's history. He says, if you don't care about it, if you've inherited some great work of art that is worth a fortune and you don't know that it's worth a fortune, you don't even know that it's a great work of art and you're not interested in it. He says, if that's the way you think, you're going to lose it. You're going to lose it. We have to know how valuable this truth is. We have to know how valuable it is. And if you know how valuable it is, then you can begin to really love it and appreciate it and hold on to it and defend it. Teaching, as I said a moment ago, is critical in this process. And as David McCullough brought out, we've got to do a better job of teaching our teachers. He says, we have too many teachers who are graduating with degrees in education. They go to schools of education or they major in education and they graduate knowing something called education, but they don't know a subject. They're assigned to teach botany or English literature or history. And of course, they can't perform as they should. Knowing a subject is important because you want to know what you're talking about when you're teaching. But beyond that, you can't love what you don't know. If you don't know it, how are you going to love it? If you don't know the Bible, how can you love and defend the words of the Bible? McCullough says here, and the great teachers, the teachers who influence you, who change your lives, almost always, I'm sure, are the teachers that love what they are teaching. It's that wonderful teacher who says, come over here and look in this microscope. You're really going to get a kick out of this. It all gets back to teaching, whether from parents or educators. And loving the truth. Look at what it says here again in John 8. Before the break, I read John 8:44, where it talked about Satan the devil being the father of lies. If you back up to verse 30, John 8, verse 30, it says, and as he spoke these words, many believed on him. They believed on him. But here again, he says over and over in the Gospels, why do you call me Lord, but you don't do what I say? Why do you believe on me, to use this passage, but you won't apply these teachings? You won't use this truth. You won't put it into practice. You won't live it. Verse 31, then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then are you my disciples. And you shall know the truth, verse 32, and the truth shall make you free. You have to continue in the word. You can't water it down. You can't set it aside. You can't misapply it or misinterpret it. It needs no special human interpretation. God interprets it. He tells us what he means. But how well do we know the source? That's the thing. How much do we feed on this truth? It said in John 17:17, sanctify them through your truth. Your word is truth. So again, to look back at this verse, John 8:32, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It says, know the truth. To know the truth is knowledge. God's word, God's truth. It's knowledge that we have to build our lives on. We have to build our lives around this truth. And that means living by it. And that's what sets us free. God's truth sets us free. Verse 33, they answered him, we be Abraham's seed, and we're never in bondage to any man. How say you, you shall be made free? What are you talking about? We're not in bondage. We're already free, they thought. And that's just what Satan has convinced this world. And he brings forth his ministers, his messengers, his teachers. They're everywhere. And they're out there promoting Satan's message. They're out there, as it says in 2 Peter 2, promising liberty. Promising freedom, promising fairness, love, equality, justice. And yet, as Peter went on to say, they themselves are servants of corruption. For of whom a man is overcome, of the same is he brought in bondage. Satan is so subtle. He'll chip away at the truth. He'll do it over the course of years, over the course of decades, over the course of generations. And all along the way, all that he wants for us to do is to just compromise with the truth. Here just a bit, over there just a little bit. Compromise with it. Give in to those carnal pulls of the flesh. And it's all with the aim of bringing us into captivity, to where we're just servants of corruption. God says, get to know the truth. God says, build your lives around the truth. You'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Let me just conclude with this Melanie Phillips quote, or this column that she did. I mentioned this example in the first segment about Shakespeare and just how that even at the Globe Theater, they're watering down the words of Shakespeare. They're watering down these great plays of William Shakespeare. And Melanie Phillips says this, Shakespeare's plays connect British children to their national identity. They also teach them everything they need to know about human nature and relationships, about love and death and ambition and conscience and betrayal. They teach these plays. If you stick to the truth, if you stick to the original, the repeated flinching at the apparent difficulty of the language derives from the view that children must never be presented with any obstacles. This explains the obsession with relevance, she writes, or couching everything in the idiom of today's world. The result is the debasement of Shakespeare's sublime poetry. She says here, Shakespeare's language has to be decoded to be understood. Children love cracking codes because it gives them power. You see, you just need a good educator. You need a good teacher. It's just like David McCullough said. Children love to be taught the truth. And the truth, like Mr. Armstrong says in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, well, it's more exciting and captivating than fiction. If you'll get someone in there to teach it that loves the truth. Well, children can crack the codes, Phillips says. And that will enormously boost their self-esteem. According to the American Alliance for Theater and Education, performing Shakespeare's plays helps improve students' understanding of other complex material, including science and math. Stick to the original, in other words, and you get smarter. You get more depth. You'll know. You shall know the truth. And the truth will make you free, Jesus said. She says, finally, that's why Shakespeare's plays help the most disadvantaged. That's why teachers or theater directors who bolderize these plays or imbue them with quote-unquote relevant gimmicks treat the most disadvantaged with contempt, corrupt the work of the greatest playwright in history, and debase our general culture. Well, she hits that right on the head. The debasement of our general culture, corrupting the original of the greatest playwright in history, and treating the disadvantaged children who should be learning from these plays, treating them with contempt. You shall know the truth, and the truth, only the truth, will set you free. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on yet another one-hour broadcast right here on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmonds. Send us your emails in the days ahead, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.